This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
All right. Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Recording as those of you listening to us live, we're recording just after the close today, January 27th. This is our episode 100th extravaganza. I'd like to thank those of you who are getting a head start on your weekend listening to us live. I guess the only downside I can see is you can't speed us up and listen at 2x speed.
Yeah, that 2x speed is critical. I can't stand to listen to anybody at normal speed most of the time.
Except Jeff Sherman at 2x is a little bit too fast for me.
Yeah, I got to slow it down to like 0.5x on that.
then it sounds like he's been imbibing a little bit. All right. Well, I guess that's a good enough intro. Happy to have everyone here. Why don't we get into the where are we for the week, Sam?
All right, sounds good. So going around the markets, starting with the S&P 500 first, the S&P 500 is up about 2.5% on a week-to-date basis, rounding out the year at just over 6% positive performance. And I got to throw in that positive after that debacle that we had in 2022 to make sure people know the directionality of the markets here. In terms of the best performers within, let's see, the 11 sectors underlying the S&P 500, the leaders were consumer discretionary, up about 6.5% for the week, and then comm services up 4.3%. And as I'm looking at it on a year-to-date basis, those are also the best performers on a year-to-date basis, both up in the teens. Consumer discretionary is up 14.5% and comm services up 15.5%. So, you know, in this short start to the year that we have, as we're going into as we just closed out the fourth week of 2023, by far and away, it seems like consumer discretionary and consumer services are outperforming the others, which are all, it's a kind of a mixed bag, but the best third performer there is technology, and it's up about 9.8%. So, it kind of looks like a little bit of that worst shall be first. The worst of 2022 is starting out to be the first in terms of 2023. Again, the first 4 weeks of this year. On the flip side, we did have two negative sectors for the week-to-date basis. Utilities was down 0.5 point and healthcare down 80 basis points. Looking at it again from that consumer discretionary services and technology leading the way for this week, it seems like, you know, a lot of those growthier names, a lot of people think of them as the tech sectors, but some of them fall in consumer discretionary, others fall in comm services, and of course they fall in the tech. They seem to be outperforming this year, and we see it in the differential between the Russell 1000 growth versus the Russell 1000 value. Growth is outperforming value this year to the tune of growth being up about 8.7% and value being up 5%. So a little bit of a lead there in the growth versus value. Moving over to fixed income here, looking at across the curve, the two-year treasury note ended with a yield of 4.20, up 3 basis points on the yield over the prior close on Friday. The 10-year treasury is at 3.52, and the long bond is up at 3.63 in terms of the closing yield as of this Friday. And that was the one part on the curve that actually rallied a little bit. The bond is bond yield is lower by 2 basis points, it looks like, right now. So what that meant for the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate was flat and ended the week at just about zero here. But on the year-to-date basis, still a strong start, just about 320 on the year-to-date performance. When we take a look across the board here, let me just check again. But again, looks like we have a little bit of that worst shall be first again for 2023. EM and IG corporate credit both up about 4.8% on the year, about a full percentage point better than the next best performer, which would be agency MBS, which was up about 3.5% or so, kind of tied with high yield there. But when we look across the week-to-date performance, it was a little bit of a mixed bag in the fixed income sectors. The floating rate bank loans, they're up a quarter point on the week. That's the best performer this week. But when we take a look at it, it's below investment grade rated corporate counterpart in the high yield corporate credit space. That was flat on the week, which is a little bit of a head scratcher given, you and I, Jeff, we've been talking about how high yield tends to be a little similar in terms of your expectations for performance sometimes when it comes relative to the U.S. equity market. But with the S&P 500 up 2.5, a little bit of a head scratcher to see high yield corporates flat, especially when you got the bank loans up a quarter point there.
And within the Bloomberg Ag, it is kind of a interesting movements also with IG corporates, as you said, kind of down slightly, treasuries down slightly, but agency MBS actually up on the week. So, some spread tightening there on the agency MBS side. Given that rates were up, and I was going to say, Sam, that when was the last time we actually, I guess it's like a basis point and 3 basis points on the curves on 2s, 10s, and the 3-month tenure. But when's the last time we actually saw a little bit of those curves uninverting, even though it's a very, very small amount?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually been quite a while here. So with the 3-month versus the 10-year yield spread there, it's just that negative 1.16 now. So a little bit of alleviation of that inversion, but I guess it's something to pay attention to, see if we can see that trend, or not that trend, if we can see that continue. Moving over to the other parts of the market outside of traditional investment assets, we look at the commodity market, the Bloomberg Commodity Index, rather, is down about 40 basis points on a week-to-date basis. Unlike last year, it does have a negative handle in front of the year-to-date performance as well. It's down 70 basis points on the year-to-date basis. Within there, looking at WTI crude oil futures, it came down below that 80. That 80 seems to be the mark that the WTI front month crude oil future has a problem breaking through on a consistent basis of late, pretty much for the last few months here, but it did end the week at 79.4 dollars per barrel of WTI crude. That's down 2.5% over previous week. Looking at gold also, just like the Bloomberg aggregate, ended the week flat, just at $1,928 a troy ounce for the front month gold futures there, but pretty much exactly flat over the previous week. And then rounding it out into the crypto space as the proxy, Bitcoin is over the 23,000 mark, something we haven't seen in a little while. That's up 3.5%. As we like to joke around here, for the week, 3.5% is pretty much flat for something like Bitcoin. But when I look over at the year-to-date space, it's up about 40%. So in terms of the various, I guess you can call them, asset classes that we look at here, Bitcoin is by far and away the outperformer so far in this 4 weeks of 2023. But with that roundup, do you want to kick us off on what we saw in the past week in terms of macro land?
Yeah, it was a pretty busy week. On Monday, we get the leading index, the LEI, came out for December. The estimate was it was supposed to come in and down 0.7% and came in at a negative 1.0%. So a big miss to the, definitely a miss to the downside. Also, the prior month was revised down further. That brings the year-over-year number down to negative 6.0 from negative 4.7. So again, if you're using this as a leading index, it looks like, or for a leading index for recession, looks like we should currently be, or very soon to be, in a recession. On Tuesday, we did get the S&P Global Manufacturing PMI numbers and the services PMI numbers. The manufacturing number came in slightly above expectations at 46.8. It was expected to be a 46.0 number. And similarly, with the services number came in at 46.6, estimated to be 45.0. So some bounces there from the above where they were estimated, but still kind of below 50. So still in contraction, both on the manufacturing and services side of things. Nothing happened on Wednesday, really, in terms of the macro land. On Thursday, we did get the GDP annualized number came in at a positive 2.9%. That number was expected to be 2.6, so beat expectations there. It was kind of one of those GDP numbers, though, that you can pick and choose, slice and dice things as much as you'd want. The headline number is certainly stronger than expected at 2.9, but consumption was weaker than expected, and people definitely pointing to the private final domestic demand rising just 0.2%. So if you want to choose if you want to be bearish, if you want to think that we're in a recession or we're going to be in a recession soon, there's ways to slice and dice that up and to look at it. If you want to be bullish, just look at the headline number. We did get the jobless claims also on Thursday. Those numbers actually came in better than expected, or the initial claims came in better than expected at 186,000, was estimated to be 205,000. Continuing claims ticked up slightly to, or ticked up versus expectations, at 1.675 million versus the 1.658 that was expected. Still very low numbers overall. And then this morning, we did get personal income and personal spending. Personal income came in 0.2%, and personal spending came in at a negative 0.2%. Those numbers were right on expectations. Looking at that, I guess because it came in expectations, not really a market moving event there. It's good to see that maybe spending down slightly and personal income up slightly. So that's okay. And then the Fed's preferred inflation gauge also came out this morning. PCE deflator came out. The month over month number for December, headline number was 0.1%, slightly above expectations of a flat. That brought the year over year number, though, in line with expectations at 5.0%. And then the Fed's overall preferred inflation gauge core PCE came in at 0.3 as expected. That brings the year-over-year number to 4.4. So starting to continue that trend that we've been seeing in terms of inflation. We've seen, if you look over the past three, people like to annualize very short-term periods. So if you take the last 3 months and annualize that, it's 2.9% on core PCE. So that's getting close to that two level that the Fed is looking for. Looks like, so I think the Fed can take some solace in that and really look at it and say that that the trend is, I think, we have enough data points now to say that the trend is going for lower inflation, and that really we look at it and can say that the Fed will be happy with that, but not happy enough to not hike rates on next Wednesday.
Yeah, I guess the good news is we don't have to wait too long to find out what Jay Powell and his cohort have to say about it. But I guess the big determinant is going to be how Jerome Powell handles the press conference next week. So good news is, again, we don't have to wait too long for that.
it seems like it should be some smooth sailing there on Wednesday. Unless we'll keep your eye on the Nick Timiraos Twitter over the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. He comes out and says 50 or 75 is definitely going to be a shock to the market. And it just gives me flashbacks to what was it last June, going into the week prior, the market was basically saying it's going to be 50 basis points. And then lo and behold, we get the little article coming out, was it Saturday or Sunday? But basically you just saw markets react that following Monday, to the news there. So, gives some of us, there a little bit of distress to anytime Timiraos comes out over the weekend. So keep an eye for that.
That's right. Let's move on to the topic of the week. And we were kind of discussing what do we want to do for this momentous occasion of episode 100 of our first Twitter Spaces live broadcast. And I hit up my brother and he was like, why don't you guys just do what's your favorite episode or what's your favorite episode? What's kind of the most memorable episode? And then Sam, you and I discussed what do we think are kind of the most relevant episodes of the topics that we've covered in the past over the past 99 episodes, and what's most relevant today. So why don't you kick us off on what was your favorite episode?
Yeah, when you first brought up that idea, you know, I was my first thought, as I told you, is I think it's the episode that we recorded. Let's see, it's episode 18 on June 4th of 2021, and it was on the Fed's overnight reverse repo facility there. And, you know, in thinking about that, there's a number of reasons for that. A lot of it was, I mentioned to you that, you know, I felt like I learned quite a bit in doing some of the research there. But from the personal side, yeah, as I was thinking back more about it, I remember I recorded that episode from my mom's house back in Wisconsin. And that was, you know, just a year or so since the beginning of the pandemic. So it was nice to see her again. You know, I hadn't seen her for some time. So it was also a little bit weird, though, because she really just gave zero F's, let's say, about the workspace, you know, the fact that I was actually working. You know, I remember she walked into the study where I was at, my dad's study, while I was on client video calls, you know, just to give me food, even though she knew what I was doing. So I just remember thinking, these clients or prospective clients thinking, so what the hell is this guy still living at his mom's house for, you know? But outside of that, you know, there were, you know, the other reasons why I liked that episode for the reverse repo facility was that, you know, when I went back to look at the original question, because I remember that was a topic of the week that came from one of our listeners there. And when I went back through our emails to parse through it and see what the actual question was, I saw that there were two submissions for this, that same topic in a really short window of time. So to me, that just shows the relevance of some of the, you know, discussion topics that we can bring for our listeners. But we did have an email submitted that the Friday before we recorded on May 28th, and that came from longtime listener Jordan. So shout out to Jordan if he's still listening to us after, you know, on our 100th episode after all this time. And then there we had another email just the following Wednesday from that, from Tom. So with that, you know, I remember we answered that question the following Friday on June 4th again. And going into that episode, I don't know about you, Mayberry, but I really didn't know much about the Fed's reverse repo facility there. So I did learn quite a bit through our research process. And yeah, I liked how we were able to draw from our internal resources as well. You know, we have the full trading desk here, you know, across a number of different sectors of both, you know, of the fixed income market there. So for this topic, we went to our government portfolio managers, Gregory Whitley and Elaine Zhang, to get their thoughts and just, you know, really draw on those resources to help formulate our own viewpoints. And from that, you know, we rounded up that internal resource with going external to the Fed site to look at the minutia, you know, help provide the context and the definition for why the overnight reverse repo facility was created. But, you know, looking back, I mean, that was really the perfect episode. The topic was timely. And when we look at it, it's still relevant today. Yeah, at the time of that question, I wrote it down here, the facility was, let's see, just under $500 billion. And that was up from about $150 billion the month prior. And then today, it still stands at over $2 trillion. So it's really grown in terms of utilization. But another reason I liked that episode too is it was something that, you know, it seems like we were both, you know, less informed about. I remember talking with Whiteley and learning a lot from him and Elaine, but just requiring us to learn something new along the way is always great. So and I'll do a little bit of chest thumping here. It also illustrates the quick turnaround that we have in terms of being able to get back to our listener questions there. So a lot of times, you know, people are thinking about things that they're hearing or something, if they're in the industry, they might be hearing from their clients and they want a quick turnaround. So we turned it around in a week. That won't always be the case, I guess, but that, you know, that was some of the reasons why this episode or that episode was my favorite.
Yeah. And then that makes sense. I think that, you know, certainly as we've delved into a lot of these topics, there are things that the one comes to mind is the supplemental leverage ratio, which is something that never really heard of before and never really understood its importance. But I think we got that as another topic of the week, 1 week. And, you know, something that, you know, as you said, like, we like to learn. This is a learning experience for us also. And so it's really helpful for us to, you know, get these questions, get these pertinent questions and do some deep diving and then, you know, try to distill it down to something that people can understand.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because I remember when you first brought this idea of doing this weekly podcast to me, I said, I don't know, I'm already doing the Sherman Show, it's going to be a lot of work, I know how much work it takes, and you know, not just for the people, the host here, but right now as we're recording this, we have a lot of people listening in from Double Line here who help the production side. You know, it takes a lot of people to put this together, but you know, and you saying that, you know, we wanted to simplify things and make things, you know, accessible for people. I remember you mentioned to me, it's like, you know, you wanted this to be conducted in a way that, you know, your parents, if they're, you know, when they're listening, they can understand, you know, to minimize the jargon, break down concepts kind of from start to finish, you know, and that's what we do. We start with a definition and really we end with, you know, trying to provide some concept of, you know, how we like it, how we would think about it from an investment perspective. So. Yeah, I think it definitely can be a good resource for people.
Yeah, and my mom said she was going to try to listen live. So if you are listening, hi, Mom.
Hello, Mrs. Jerry.
We'll get on to my favorite episode. There was a couple that we did kind of summer of 2021, episode 26 and 28 on July 30th of 2021 and August 13th of 2021. And that was when we covered both preferred securities and closed-end funds. You know, if you remember back then, everyone was searching for yield. There's a lot of yield out there now today. But back then, searching for yield, people were, you know, trying to figure out where can I get some income. And I thought that these episodes were ones that were kind of timely, again, giving kind of actionable information to people, to our listeners. And really, you know, we don't really traffic in preferreds too much. So, you know, that was kind of a, you know, I knew generally of preferreds. And so that was another learning experience to me that, you know, to kind of dive into the preferred market and try to distill things down and try to give people some recommendations on how the market works and whether it would fit their risk profile and their investment profile. And then also the one time we dipped our toe into crypto, we did cover stable coins. That's like episode 65, I think. That's as far as we tried to get into the crypto world, but we did cover stable coins back then. And then also, you know, my first episode that popped in my mind when we were talking about kind of most memorable or favorite episodes was episode 10 back on April 9th of 2021, where we got a listener question on what's our favorite books and whether it was, obviously we started off on the investment side talking about our favorite investing books or market books and kind of then got into our favorite kind of fiction or nonfiction books. But that popped into my mind also. And then finally, this one is something that we'll never let Eric Dahl forget about, was his second appearance on the Monday Morning Minutes podcast, episode 66. It was on May 20th of 2022, when he ruined our perfect streak of not having anything cut out from our compliance team. So, you know, knock on wood, Sam, we've been pretty good. And that, you know, all the people that are listening live will hear that we don't really edit the podcast. It's just kind of we just go back and forth, and that's kind of how we go. So if you listen to episode 66, you're not going to hear Eric talk about things he shouldn't have talked about.
Yeah, and that also, you know, goes back to it takes a village type concept. We have, you know, our compliance with us live, and I'm sure we're keeping ELA on our toes right now, hoping that we don't cross the line with compliance. But we've kind of built that trust over the prior 99. Episode. So hopefully Mila's not freaking out too much with us, and we're going to keep within the guidelines here.
Another thing you did highlight, Sam, is you enjoy when we record the Fed market recaps. And if you had told me 2 years ago, I'd be combing through the transcript of the Jay Powell's press conferences, I would have thought you were crazy. But I also enjoy those. And it's I think that knowing that we're going to have to talk about it in 2 days kind of it brings into focus the, you know, you have to pay attention. You have to listen to what Jay's saying and how he's saying it. And so I think that's also been helpful.
Yeah, definitely. So speaking of helpful, I mean, you built up a list that I completely agree with in terms of which episodes listeners might, if they haven't listened to them in the past, you know, they can go back onto our website on doubleline.com and look for our market insights for these podcast where we'll have them listed in terms of a whole library of our past episodes there. But these are somewhat relevant today still. I mean, I'll start out with episode 9. I recorded that in April 1st, 2021. That's where we cover and really go into the deep dive on what the underlying data is provided on what we refer to as Pizza Friday, but it's the first Friday of every month when you get the jobs data from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. So we dig through the, you know, the differences and how to think about non-farm payrolls versus the, and that's the so-called establishment report versus the household surveys, which you get the headline unemployment rates from the U3 and the U6 reports. And just really, you know, talking about how to distill that information to look beyond just that headline rate and try to discern whether or not the labor economy is still strong or if it's weakening, where the strength is and where it's not. And just really, as we've talked about it since, you know, 2021, till now, is just, we've talked about how strong the labor market has been. And right now, it seems to be the last kind of economic data point that points to continued strength in the U.S. Of course, that data is a little bit lagged. And that's why, you know, each month when that comes out, we do spend a little bit of time talking about it and talking about how it may shift in the future. You know, something similar is, you know, we talk about the initial and continuing claims for unemployment insurance. One thing that we've noticed is that it really hasn't ticked up, you know, to correspond with what we've been seeing in the headlines, especially around the tech sector where they've been doing a lot of layoffs. But, you know, as we talk about that, you know, it comes down to the nuances where if the layoffs are largely in tech, perhaps people aren't collecting unemployment, you know, right away, because in that type of industry, perhaps they're getting some type of dismissal type benefits that, you know, preclude them from going and being able to, you know, apply for unemployment insurance. So maybe that's is much more lagged when it comes to that. And maybe we'll start seeing that in the next few weeks to months. So that is something that we keep an eye on. But that's distilled again in episode 9. Something that's very timely right now, episode 27 that we recorded in August 6th of 2021, we talked about the debt ceiling. We broke it down. I remember that was when I first learned about that that term called the X date, which is the expected date that the U.S. Treasury could breach their debt limit, you know, based on what they estimate to be the scheduled kind of spending versus revenues that they get. And I saw today, and that's why I refreshed my memory, I saw Deutsche Bank put out something. They're saying in Deutsche Bank's estimate is for the X date is to be the end of August. So we'll look forward to, or I mean, I guess we won't look forward to it, but we'll be looking to see what type of spending cuts that the Treasury is going to have to put out there to kind of so-called balance this difference between the debt ceiling, the expenditures, and expected revenues.
I just hung my head when you said end of August, because that means we have seven more months of going back and forth in Congress, blaming each other and not getting anything done, because you know it won't happen. If it's happening in the end of August, you know that until the second half of August, maybe it won't be exactly in the second half of August, because Congress does like to take their vacations during the summer. So maybe it happens a little bit earlier, but certainly it's not happening anytime soon. So we'll have to continue hearing about the debt ceiling for the foreseeable future. And for those of you that have already listened to the Sherman Show, we recorded, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago. One of the Sherman Says questions was on the debt ceiling, and I had a nice one-word answer for that, if I do say so myself. Another episode I thought was pretty relevant was episode 38 from October 22nd of 2021. That's on bank loans and senior secured loans. That was a sector and a topic that was something that people, including ourselves, really liked going into last year, maybe don't like as much going into this year, but really something that when we do that, we did talk about bank loans. I revisit that to kind of see why people are, or maybe why they are or aren't, you know, an attractive investment at this point in time. Also, episode 41 on November 12th of 2021, we talked about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and how it wasn't really being used strategically. And then again, also, since we've had such a, you know, we have a almost 100% probability of the Fed raising rates by 25 basis points on Wednesday. But we don't know what's going to happen out on the March 22nd meeting from the Fed. Episode 44 from December 10th of 2021 goes back and forth about Fed rate hike probability. So that's another interesting one. I think we cover both the Bloomberg VORP function, and then the CME Fed rate hike probabilities page. And then again, something that's obviously these are all supposed to be relevant and top of mind, but episode 47 from January 7th of last year, the Atlanta Fed wage growth tracker and employment cost index and the ECI. I'm going to front run myself here, Sam. The ECI does come out on Tuesday. It's expected to be at 1.1, down from 1.2. So that trend will be helpful, but that's another an indicator that Jay Powell will look at and really will be something that could move the Fed's decision on Fed rate hikes. Certainly episode 58 from March 25th of last year on quantitative tightening. And then also we had a couple back-to-backers here, or I guess we skipped 1 week, but episode 86 and 88 from beginning of October and end of October last year. On October 7th, we did talk about JOLTS, and that obviously is top of mind for the Fed and those job openings. And then, you know, we discussed on October 21st, the NBER and recessions and what they do, what they call for recession, when they call for recessions. And certainly, you know, given where we are today, given where we are in the market, people seeing this GDP number of 2.9%, real GDP, and then say that we're in a recession right now, based on what we went through on that episode, I don't think that the NBER is going to call a recession, or that we're currently in a recession. And then an episode we just did like 3 weeks ago on the 3-month, the 10-year curve, that was on episode 97 on is this time different? And for those of you that we went through those pretty quickly, but Jason, our Twitter guy, has put links out to the iTunes links for all of those podcasts and has them listed in their description. So if any one of those is something that you would like to listen to that piqued your fancy, then you can click it there on the Twitter link. Also, they should be obviously on your favorite podcast app, and they should be up on our website before the bell on Monday.
Yeah. So hopefully people found that helpful. This is a little bit different. It's quite a bit different than our usual format, where we do take in listeners' questions to be used as the topic of the week. But thanks to Brother Burry for giving us kind of this, a fun idea for our 100th episode there. But it's nice to kind of go back through memory lane to figure out some of these things that we've done. And, looking at that list, it was pretty cool to see the things that we talked about.
And I was happy that, after episode 40 or so, we decided to keep a running list as opposed to having to go back through all 100 episodes right now.
Yeah, who knew we'd make it this far? So
with that, things to keep an eye on for next week. I already talked about the ECI coming in on Tuesday. Also on Tuesday, we do get the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20 City Home Price Index. That number for the 20 City month over month expected to drop another 70 basis points or 0.7%. It was down at negative 0.18% the prior month. That would bring the year-over-year number back to a much more reasonable 6.8%, down to over 2% from the prior month of 8.6. I think, Sam, we're of the mindset that certainly a 20% per year home price appreciation is not sustainable. 6.8 seems like that's much more in that sustainable range. We also get on Wednesday the ISM, or as like you like to say, Sam, the ISM manufacturing number for January. This is to February 1st, so right after the end of January, they come out with that number. That number is expected to be 48.0, down 0.4 from the prior month of 48.4. So that number has been below 50, so been showing contractionary for a while now on the ISM numbers. Then we get, as I just discussed, the JOLTS job openings number for December. The number is expected to decline from 10.458 million last month to 10.3 million this month. As usual, we also get the jobless claims numbers on Thursday, so keep an eye on those. And then, Mark Kimbrough puts together this economic recap for us, and he typically highlights in yellow the important data points. But this week, for some reason, he didn't highlight the Pizza Friday non-farm payrolls data. So I don't know if he thinks that that's not important anymore, or that we wouldn't catch the fact that he didn't highlight it. But it is expected to come in at 188,000, down from 223,000 the prior month. Really looking at it, we're starting to see a decline there, a trend lower. The number has been while still positive, so the labor market is growing, It has been shrinking for five consecutive months. And if this is the, if we do come in below 223,000, that would make it six. So still growing, but slowing, which is, you know, I would say that's probably what the Fed wants. Certainly, we also get on Piece of Fridays, the unemployment rates, Sam, which we just talked about, the U3 unemployment is expected to tick up from 3.5% to 3.6%. And then the underemployment is something that we always like to keep an eye on. That's at 6.5. That was at 6.5 last month. Economists don't estimate it, but keep an eye on and compare that to the 6.5. Then, of course, the all-important labor force participation rate expected to remain flat at 62.3. And then this one on Friday, I think this one comes out at 7 a.m. as opposed to the Pizza Friday numbers come out at 5:30 here on the West Coast. We get the ISM services number. That number is expected to pop back up to 50.5 from a 49.2 last month. Really looking back, the ISM services number being in a contraction, so below 50 was something that was kind of surprising. It had been the one services PMI number the one PMI number that had been in expansion. This last month went to contraction, so it'll be interesting to see whether we go back up to expansion or we stay in contraction. So that's another important data point that'll probably be drowned out by the payroll numbers. But it is something that you should keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a busy week next week in terms of the economic data front, and of course we got the FOMC. So for people who are on the podcast, don't forget we'll have our FOMC recap for the topic of the week next week.
And it'll be me and Eric will do it, so that'll be fun.
Sounds good. I'll be tuning in and then hoping to figure out what the FOMC did at that meeting.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, both live, those of you live on the Twitter spaces, and also those of you listening to the podcast at 2x speed.
Yeah, thanks for listening to us out there today for Monday Morning Minutes. Please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can always pick us up each Monday before the bell. And if you're not able to find us on your favorite podcast platform, go ahead and hit us up on email at minutes@doubleline.com. Or you can hit us up on the Twitter at DLine Minutes. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, or if you have a topic of the week, submission, go ahead and send it to us via any of those formats, and we will get to them.
Yeah, and let us know if you like listening live, and maybe we'll attempt to continue doing these live Twitter spaces. Don't forget to check out our website, doubleline.com. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. Where you can watch Jeffrey Gundlach have a discussion on bonds from earlier, I think it was 3 weeks ago in January 6th of this year, bonds and his forecasts and just investments overall across the globe. I thought that was an interesting short half an hour type video. And also you can check out Sam and I on the most recent episode of The Sherman Show. I told my daughter she's a YouTube star because there's a picture of her behind me in the video and she didn't care. So. You can zoom in and check that out. Make sure to follow Sam and Jeff on Twitter there at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.